Hello and welcome to the People Who Read People podcast with me, Zach Elwood. This is a podcast aimed at better understanding other people and better understanding ourselves. This is an episode about hypnosis and trying to separate the real from the fake. Since I was young, I've had a lot of questions about hypnosis, what exactly is possible with it, what's bullshit and what's real. It's actually pretty hard to get answers to these kinds of questions via online research, from what I found, because there are so many people who peddle hypnosis and influence type bullshit, who speak in deceptive and exaggerated ways about what's possible with these things. But in this episode, I talked to someone who I think will help us separate fact from fiction a bit. His name is Martin Taylor. He's a stage hypnotist, but also someone who approaches hypnosis with a lot of realism. He calls what he does hypnotism without hypnosis, because during his shows, he transparently explains the psychological factors behind how so-called hypnosis works. And he still gets the results associated with stage hypnosis shows. When I was asking around for someone who'd be good to talk to about these areas, his name came up a couple times from psychology researchers as someone who'd be good to talk to. Also, perhaps interesting, if you know who Darren Brown is, Darren got the idea for his act from Martin's act. You can learn more about Martin Taylor at his site, hypnotism.co.uk. You can watch some videos of his stage act there too. If you've been following my podcast, you know that I've been examining the many lies and exaggerations of a person named Chase Hughes, who promotes himself as an expert at influencing people, amongst various other things. My investigation into Chase's immense amount of bullshit was the reason I initially reached out to Martin Taylor a few months ago. To give you a sense of the kinds of things Chase Hughes peddles, I'll read a little bit from his website. The CIA developed enhanced mind control methods as a matter of public record. The CIA programmers experiments, ranging from programming sexual slaves to creating hypnotic assassins, even involving teenage girls. The methods they used were elementary at best. The Ellipsis manual contains world-first information available nowhere else on planet Earth. A person can be hypnotized against their will. A person can and will perform extremely violent and antisocial acts under hypnosis, without their consent or knowledge, and will disregard safety, morals, and law. Using the Ellipsis manual gives an operator complete access to the psychological compromise of almost any human being they encounter. The Ellipsis manual teaches operators a world-first set of methods ranging from covert creation of multiple personality disorder to developing mental slavery scenarios wherein a subject will disregard all beliefs. Further down the page, it reads, a subject can be controlled for behavioral engineering within as little as 3 minutes. A deliberately induced multiple personality, parentheses dissociative personality, can be created in less than an hour. Further down the page, it reads, from the first day, you will be able to read the thoughts of people you interact with, and you will eventually learn to control them as well. This is most assuredly a life-changing experience that will continue to grow with you forever. The feeling that comes from knowing your words will work like covert instruments of psychological control is an incredible and powerful feeling. So that's from his site, using the Internet Archive Wayback Machine. This is just the tip of the iceberg of the many amazing, astounding things Chase Hughes has claimed he can do and teach people to do. I have a previous episode examining Chase's many lies and unethical behaviors, which helps make some sense of these kinds of claims. And Chase is still promoting these ideas to some large audiences. Chase was recently on Joe Rogan, which to me represented one of many amazing low points for Rogan in terms of guest selection. Rogan clearly doesn't care much about vetting his guests for obvious red flags and unethical behaviors.
So let me tell you, when it comes to all these beliefs formation, I'll tell you the formula for hypnosis.
Okay.
And this, I don't think anybody's ever said this. I've never said it out loud, not even in my training. It's enhanced level of focus and then micro compliances. So like if I'm a, have you seen the street performers that would hypnotize somebody in a bar or like, mm-hmm. you know, like to do something silly, or maybe they're helping them. So the first step is like, if I'm hypnotizing you and it's in a social setting, The first couple of steps are, all right, come over here. Now stand to the left. Now move your legs just a little bit further. Now spread them further apart so you have some balance. All right, now just make sure you have some range of motion. Go ahead and put your arms out. None of those are meaningful.
Right.
They're all meaningless. All I'm doing is get you to comply, 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 comply. And that's just the first like 30 seconds. I've got you to comply with me 15 times. We haven't even started the hypnosis thing yet. And so it's just you're not aware that you're becoming compliant. You just think I'm going through some motions.
But it's just hijacking the mammal brain.
Yeah. So it's compliance, compliance, compliance.
And it's not like just guessing. It's like there's real programs that they were involved in that were absolutely doing that kind of work.
100%.
Yeah. And that's really crazy to think of.
And it gets deeper. Like there are step-by-step programs they have for creating a Manchurian candidate.
Okay, like what's step one? How do you know when you can get a guy to be a Manchurian candidate? Can you do anybody or do you have to get a vulnerable guy? Do you have to get a guy with
say
no
everything.
Family?
I think some of this could be misused.
So the Sirhan Sirhan thing is like that people believe that's part of MK Ultra, that he was some sort of mind-controlled person.
I do.
Yeah?
And I may be the number one guy in the country on the mind control stuff. I think I probably am. And I definitely believe that was influenced by a guy named Dr. Joylen West.
Chase also talks to Joe Rogan about being able to create multiple personalities in people, which he has referenced on his website.
And then another time, they give somebody what they watch a gun being loaded. They split the personality and like do some kind of sleight of hand to unload the firearm. And then they're told to like pull this firearm out and go shoot this person in the face. And when the trigger is given to you, like a guy tapping his pencil or something, and they do it.
And this is just hypnosis that caused them? They're not using any psychedelic drugs or psychotropic medicine?
You don't need it.
Nothing?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's easier than you think.
For some people, right?
High authority on one end the person doing the program and high suggestibility on the other, then your skills don't need to be that good. You don't need to manufacture suggestibility. If they say, here's this guy, I need to split this guy, and he's not very suggestible, then your skills have to be high. But if I have high suggestibility in the target, high authority in the person doing the programming, I have ultimate results.
So that's some of the stuff Martin and I will be talking about, these kinds of over-the-top amazing claims about what's possible with hypnosis. Because there are just many people peddling these kinds of things. Chase is just one of many in the neuro-linguistic programming and hypnosis space who tries to promote such skills and training. Here's one random example I found on a quick search. A video course for $44.95 by someone named Scott Jensen titled Hypnosis, Covert Hypnosis Mastery. The description reads, the A to Z guide to use covert hypnosis to create hidden hypnotic trances with everyone you speak to in seconds. Here's a course at a site, coverthypnosis.co.uk. Interpersonal Neural Synchrony, Covert Hypnosis, Conversational Hypnosis, Influence, Persuasion, Negotiation, Rapid Seduction, and NLP Mind Control Secrets with hypnotist Dr. Jonathan Royal and behavioral analyst Mr. Paul Guterich. Farther down it reads, Dr. Jonathan Royal, the British bad boy of hypnosis, a name synonymous with hypnotic mastery. With decades of experience, Dr. Royal has unearthed the deepest secrets of the human mind. He is your guide to the mesmerizing world of covert influence. Mr. Paul Guterich, an acclaimed behavioral analyst, body language expert, and consultant in covert persuasion and influence techniques. Paul's expertise is drawn from his close association with top-notch intelligence agencies, equipping you with insider knowledge of persuasion. Some of these things are pretty clearly silly and over the top, and that's something most savvy people can see, I think. Some of this stuff doesn't seem much different than ordering x-ray specs from the back of a comic book. But at the same time, clearly some impressive things are indeed possible with hypnosis. That is obviously true. Even stage hypnotists can do impressive things fairly quickly, as we have all likely seen or heard about. When I talk to Martin will talk about how he got impressive results the first time he tried to hypnotize someone, to his own surprise. So this can make it hard to discern fact from fiction. That's where the questions come in. some impressive things are indeed possible. So why not these other more impressive things? What's real and what's bullshit? Where are the boundaries drawn? How do we know someone making big claims about hypnosis and their abilities might be full of shit or maybe is not? How do we know someone is being ethical or if they're likely trying to exploit us in some way? So those are the kinds of things I wanted to talk to Martin about. I'll read a little bit from Martin's site. Martin S. Taylor has revolutionized stage hypnosis with an astonishing new approach, hypnotism without hypnosis. He has performed shows at universities and colleges for over 20 years, and his new venture, lecturing to schools on the psychology of suggestion, is already massively popular too. A hypnotist who doesn't use hypnosis? Let's just say that again in case it didn't sink in. Martin Taylor is a hypnotist, works as a hypnotist, has been a staged hypnotist for over 15 years, yet he doesn't use hypnosis, so what's going on? Recently, psychologists have dramatically revised their ideas about how hypnosis works, and the modern theory is that of social compliance. Broadly, this means that there is no altered state when you are hypnotized, no trance, no sleep, and nothing mysterious at all. Hypnosis simply works because the subjects believe it will. On stage, it works through the hypnotist's skill in combining three factors. And then Martin goes on to talk about those three factors, which are suggestion, peer pressure, and simple obedience. Martin has many reviews for his act and for his educational lectures on his site. One review from a teacher read that Martin, quote, first explains his profession in astonishingly open terms, but having stripped away much of the false mystique, proceeds to elicit amazing reactions from his volunteers and send the audience into hysterics. Okay, here's the talk with Martin Taylor. Hi, Martin. Thanks for joining me.
Great pleasure to be here.
So I just want to start with, I want to make sure you're not going to, you know, try to hypnotize me or control me during this talk. That's not a risk I should be worried about.
I don't think so.
Okay. Just want to make sure. All right. Sorry. Okay, maybe you could give a summary about how you wound up in the hypnosis world, how you got interested in that, and how you got to doing that.
Sure. You want the full story? The whole?
Maybe like a brief, few minute.
The edited version. Okay. Yeah. I started out, I worked as a magician. I got into magic when I was an undergrad and became moderately proficient at sleight of hand. When I did my postgrad degree, I moved to London and I was doing magic at parties. I got invited to a lot of parties to do magic. And I found there was another guy called Colin, who was doing informal hypnosis on people. And we got invited as a kind of double act. I did the magic, he did the hypnosis, and I watched what he learned. And I thought it was interesting and cool. I wasn't quite sure that I believed everything that he was doing. I wasn't quite as credulous as he was, but it was fascinating. Fast forward a couple of years, I was chatting up a girl in her room, and I said, oh, yes, I know about magic and I know about hypnosis. And she said, what, you know about hypnosis? Oh, I've always wanted to be hypnotized. You've got to hypnotize me. Come on. So you can't really back down at that stage and say, well, look, I've never actually done this before. So I thought, well, I've got to give this a go. And I got in my friend and flatmate Charles as a kind of witness, just in case anything went wrong. And I did all the stuff that I'd seen Colin do. And I got a little amulet and swung it in front of her eyes for 20 minutes and told her she was getting very sleepy. And her eyes closed and she appeared to be asleep. And we thought, this is amazing. And we thought, can we give her suggestions? And, you know, standard stuff, your nose will itch. And she rubs her nose and, you know, when you open your eyes, you'll have forgotten your name. And she opened her eyes and she didn't know who she was. And we had to hypnotize her again to get her to remember her name. And we thought, this is amazing. So there was one incident at the end of it. We weren't quite sure what we were doing. And we hypnotized this girl. And we said, I said, I don't know, when you open your eyes, you'll suddenly have this uncontrollable urge to... And I looked at Charles and Charles looked at me and we both looked at this attractive girl in front of us who we could apparently make her do anything she wanted to. And we thought, no, 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 this is going too far. The same thought had gone through both our minds, but we decided we were going to be ethical about it even then. But I spent the rest of that summer, I was so fascinated that I persuaded anyone I could persuade to sit still and I got them to go through this induction procedure with the amulet and very sleepy and 20 minutes, half an hour. And there was some success. I found some people it worked on. When college resumed, some friends had organized a guest lecture. They were launching a big lecture society, and there was a famous engineer, a guy called Eric Lathwaite, was due to give a lecture on gyroscopes, which everybody knew about, was really popular, and they knew it would pull a huge crowd. But on the morning of the lecture, Lathwaite phoned up. He said, "I'm terribly sorry, I've got flu. I can't do this talk." My friend sort of panicked and said, "Well, what are we going to do? We've got this huge audience coming up. This is our big lecture, the start of our lecture season. Martin, you're the entertainer. You're the magician. Get out there and do something. Hypnotism, this thing you've been doing all summer. Oh, come on, get out and talk about hypnotism." So I thought, all right. So literally almost pushed out in front of a crowd of people and told that I would do a lecture on hypnotism. So I was used enough to performing in front of a crowd through the magic. So I chatted about the history of hypnosis and some of the theory. And I thought, well, I can't just leave it at that. These people want something spectacular. We've got to give this a go. So I asked if there was anyone who wanted to volunteer, and an enormous rush of about a third of the audience charged down the front. So I went through this, again, 20-minute spiel about going into a trance, and it worked really well. There were loads and loads of them who were excellent subjects. The audience thought it was fantastic. I got invited back. It was written up in the college newspaper next day under a banner headline, "Lecture Success, Audience Falls Asleep." And I just got invited back, and other schools got to hear about me, other colleges. And it eventually, when they made me redundant from my day job, I thought, well, let's have a go. I can do this professionally. So that's how I got into hypnosis.
So, and maybe you could talk about what is the hypnotism without hypnosis? My understanding is that you're explaining it, what it is, even as you're doing it, but it still works. But maybe you could talk about what's going on there.
Yeah, that's my take. I got into this because, firstly, I had a lot of dealings with various skeptical magicians who were very, you know, they were skeptical about UFOs and alien abductions and water dowsing and spoon bending and hypnotism. But I do that. That's real. I know. And they said, no, it's just people going along. It's people. I thought, all right, let's think about this. Let's test this. And the thing that really swung it for me, I used to end my act, I still do, but I used to end my act by giving people a glass of water and telling them it would taste like whatever they wanted. And people would take this thing and they'd drink it and they'd say, oh yes, it's beer, it's orange juice, it's whiskey, it's whatever. And I noticed after a while something really odd. Either they would all get drunk because they're all drinking beer or whiskey or wine or whatever, or none of them would get drunk. Now, both of these are entirely plausible responses. Either you think you're drinking beer, so you get drunk, or part of you knows it's only water, so you don't. But it was odd that it worked the same on everybody. Not at different shows, but at any given show, either everybody got drunk or nobody got drunk, even though I hadn't said anything about drunkenness to them. So I thought about this and realized there had to be something that was passing between them, some unspoken communication. So I decided to actually test this. And I did a show where I'd hypnotize them, told them they'd wake up and that water would be their favorite drink and they're all drinking. And I realized as they were drinking their drinks that they were all going to have to drive home. And I thought, well, I can't leave them like this and, you know, all driving home thinking they're drunk. So as an aside, I said to the audience, and even though they think they're drinking beer and whiskey, you watch, because they're only drinking water, none of them will get drunk. And none of them did. Next show, where they're all students in the hall of residence, they're not driving anywhere, I tried it the other way. So they're all going down the line, drinking the beer and drinking the whiskey. And I say to the audience, as an aside, not to the subjects, but I say to them, even though it's only water they're drinking, you'll see them start to get drunk. And they did. They start to slur their words. They're staggering. They're laughing at ridiculous things. And I discovered that I could influence what the effect of the drinks were having, even though I was giving the the remarks as an aside to the audience. This wasn't even given to them under hypnosis, whatever that is. It was just an aside. So in the end, one day I plucked up courage and I said, okay, we're going to do this absolutely straightforwardly. I will tell the audience in advance, I will tell the volunteers that there is no trance, that there is no sleep, there is no altered state, but it does just work through well-understood psychological principles. And it still worked every bit. It was only 90% as effective, not 100%. It was, you know, it was worked better if they thought there was a trance.
Right.
But basically 90%, it was just working. And that's what I still do. I still now tell them the honest truth, as I believe it, that there is no trance. There's no need for the swinging watch or any of that kind of rubbish. Because it is just suggestion, it is peer pressure, it is obedience to an authority figure, and that's what we can combine to produce the effects that we call hypnosis.
Yeah, I guess that's always what's been confusing to me and hard to get a handle on. Like the idea that people would seem to act in a different way and when questioned, like say they were questioned after a stage hypnosis. I mean, some of those people would say that they didn't understand why they were doing those things. Yeah. And it's just kind of hard for me to wrap my head around that. Cause I mean, me and probably other people, I've never been in a stage hypnosis situation, but I just imagine it's really hard for me to imagine that I would do something like go along with these things or do the things that they do on stage. And maybe you could talk about like, what do you see as the psychological factors that result in people doing the outlandish things and then not even being able to seem to understand why they did them?
Well, a lot of the people can understand. I mean, this is one of the things that I found is that hypnosis, for want, if that's the word we're going to use, it affects people in different ways. The mechanism is different. The apparent result is the same. I tell them to do silly things. They do them. But the mechanism appears to be different in different people. With some people, it is just suggestion. With some people, it's authority. It's my authority over them. With some people, it's peer pressure. All their friends are doing something. With some people, it is very much suggestion. And this was brought home to me. What common way I'll finish my act is I will tell people that they will hallucinate an elephant come walking into the room. And they all panic and run away. And then they come back and I persuade them to come and stroke the elephant and feel its trunk. And they all do all of this stuff. After the show, somebody came up to me once and he said, look, that was really weird. I knew there wasn't an elephant there. I couldn't see one. I couldn't feel it. But there was something in me that made me act as if there was. I knew somehow I had to pretend that I could see an elephant, even though I couldn't. And his best friend next to him said, I don't know what you're talking about. I would never have done that. If I hadn't seen an elephant, I would have just said, there's no elephant there. I could see an elephant. That's why I did that.
Oh, interesting.
So okay. For different people, it is working in different ways. And this is what I believe, is some people it is very much suggestion, some people it's peer pressure, some people it's obedience.
It's a range, yeah.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
Hypnosis, this is a word we use to describe a cocktail of different kinds of psychological effects, most of which are very well understood. We don't understand the degree to which they work.
Right,
we do understand how they work. I mean, people understand peer pressure. They want to do what their friends do. And they don't understand how strong it is when you get people on stage in a hypnosis setting.
Right. Yeah, I think that's what strikes me, you know, when I think about me going up to one of those things. You know, I can imagine, despite being skeptical of or unsure of how I would behave, I can imagine of not... the main thing being like, I don't want to rock the boat and I'm going to go along with this. It's like the path of least resistance or whatever, you know, cause it can be awkward to not go
absolutely.
With the flow, you know, that kind of thing.
I mean, in any situation, even though at the start people don't, I'm not trying to make it look as though I have any power over somebody. People just do it because, you know, because I'm asking them to, I'm a nice guy. I mean, simple thing. This is the kind of thing I would start at the beginning of my act. Raise one hand like that. Do that now. Yeah. I don't know whether people can see on the...
Oh, you want me to do it?
Yeah, yeah, do it now. Oh, okay. Now, lift your other arm up like that. Now, put your hands against your head and wiggle them so you make like a bunny. Hey, you're a bunny. Okay, that's it. Now, there we're doing this. You know, you are doing this. Why are you doing this? Is this hypnosis? Is this just because I'm asking you? Because, you know, you want to help me because you're a nice guy, you're obliging.
Right.
You're just doing what I'm telling you to do.
It would be interesting to see. I've often thought it'd be interesting to see, and maybe you've seen this, where they ask people in some sort of formal way after a stage hypnosis, like, why did you do those things, and see all the different ranges of responses. That would be really interesting to read all the different responses. Yeah.
And well, I tell you what people say. I don't know. A lot of people say it was really weird.
Interesting.
I knew what I was doing. I couldn't, I somehow didn't want to mess up the show in a really strong way. I didn't want to disrupt the proceedings. I didn't want to make a mess of things.
But then you have some people that will literally say they really believe they saw an elephant or whatever that extreme kind of thing is. Is that, how rare do you feel that is, like that level of, you know, imagination or creating the scenario in their minds?
I don't know, because I don't test it. I mean, at the end of the show, that's it. Right. But I can tell you that I could probably continue to lead them. If I were to go up to them at the end, I would say, look, you didn't actually see an elephant, did you? You were just doing what everybody else did because that was the nature of the show. And they would say, yeah, that's right. I couldn't see an elephant. Or I could say, isn't it weird? You can almost actually physically see an elephant there. And they say, yes, that's right. And I'm leading them along. People are taking the line of least resistance and doing what I tell them.
And I guess that's maybe that segues into the question of, you know, some people really lean into the kind of establishing authority over people, like say a therapeutic hypnotist or somebody else in the realm of, like, I'm going to influence you in such and such a way. I'm going to, like, influence you to stop smoking or whatever it may be. These kind of people also in the NLP kind of realm, self-help life coach kind of realm. Do you think, I mean, how much do you think it helps amp up the things to really establish this mystique of, like, I have these amazing powers and look at what people have said about me and, you know, look at these amazing things I've said that I've accomplished. Do you think that really amps up the influence level?
Crucial. Absolutely crucial. Yeah. You know, as it's, you have to have the publicity before the show, when you come on, when you do the show, I make a big thing of a full lecture explaining about how hypnosis really works. But every hypnotist has a little spiel at the beginning, just sort of reassuring people that it's safe. When you do that, you have to be dressed in a smart suit. You have to have a row of chairs on stage so that people know what's happening. It has to be bigged up beforehand. If you do a show, and every hypnotist has been through this nightmare, where you show up to do maybe a business function and they meet you at the start and they say, it's a surprise. They don't know there's a hypnotist coming. Oh, no, please. And you know you are going to die the death.
Yeah, is it true, if it's known, are you the person that inspired Darren Brown's act? I've read that before.
That's absolutely true, yes. Darren came to... It was the first show I did as a professional. And Darren was a student. He came up to me at the end and he said, this is fantastic. I now know what I'm going to do for a living. I now know I'm going to be a professional entertainer and a hypnotist.
Well, yeah. And I had interviewed the magician Anthony Barnhart for the podcast, and he had and we talked about some of the things you just mentioned about the magicians, you know, using a sharp impression and wanting to create that mystique, which is can be present for hypnosis too. But one of the things he talked about was some criticisms he had of Darren Brown's act, in the sense that it was communicating, you know, fooling people into thinking he had these amazing mentalist type tricks were possible, when he was really just mainly doing kind of standard magic or, you know, misdirection kind of things. But I'm curious, I don't know if you want to talk about it, but would you care to talk about, do you have those kinds of criticisms or concerns at all, considering, like, he's basically kind of doing the opposite of what you're doing. You're doing a more transparent thing, and he's doing a very, like, I'm a mentalist with these amazing powers kind of thing.
Well, he doesn't do that very much. I mean, to say we're doing the opposite thing, I think that's going too far. We do very similar things, and he will often debunk where, I mean, he's very strong about people who use it, who use the people who say they have psychic powers, and they use that directly to make money, faith healers and tarot readers and things, who will actually charge people for things like that.
Right.
Then he's very much against that.
Right.
He treads a very careful line. I mean, he is a magician.
Right. He presents it as entertainment at the end of the day.
He presents it as entertainment. He's much more concerned with leaving people with interesting questions to think about rather than challenging, how do you think I did this? There are a couple of times where I think he's got it wrong, where he's gone too far.
It's a tough line to thread.
It's a very tough line.
You want to create the engagement and the mystique and the excitement, but you also don't want to do it unethically. So I'm sure there's various things you can do in that path that will bother some people and not bother others. And
I mean, sometimes he is doing exactly what he says. He is very skilled at reading body language. Now, you can't, say to somebody, I want you to think of any word in the dictionary, and then through body language, you can tell them what it is. I mean,
that's a bit much.
On the other hand, if you say to people, which hand have I got a coin hidden in? Now, to some extent, that is possible.
Yeah,
no one's going to be 100% at it, but you can be very good at it, and Darren is very good at it.
Yeah, I actually got into this thing years ago where the trick where you could get people, you could hold people's hands and get them to think of a hand, and I got pretty good at deducing based on like moving their hand
around.
What they
call cold reading, yeah.
Not cold reading. There's a lot of interesting things in that area, and as somebody who's worked on poker tells, I believe in getting all kinds of deductions from behaviors. I was going to ask you, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you initially was I was doing this investigation into Chase Hughes, who's a self-proclaimed behavior and influence expert, who to me is very clearly a con artist. He's made many clearly untrue and silly claims about being able to control people's minds. He's written about being able to hypnotize and gain complete control of people within a few minutes of meeting them, being able to create basically Manchurian candidates and just really wacky stuff like that. So when I was investigating that stuff, it got me thinking again about hypnosis and what's possible with it. Cause I've always been interested in hypnosis. I actually got hypnosis at a young age when I was in my early 20s for therapeutic hypnosis. I didn't think it did much, but that helps explain why I've always been interested in it. But and then I once worked for an NLP seminar guy, neuro-linguistic programming guy. He was big into the hypnosis, as NLP people are, and he once told me he had put me into a trance when I felt completely normal, and I had to respond, "No, I don't think I'm in a trance." And he claimed he could hypnotize people to solve major issues and problems in major ways, these kinds of things.
Well, it's a lot of it's down to words, isn't it? What do you mean by hypnotized? What do you mean by in a trance?
Right. And that's a good place to branch off because you've talked about the various factors that can add up to influencing people. And yet you don't see it as some sort of like specific state, like called hypnosis or called trance. There's just these various factors that can influence people. Is that how you would see it?
The idea that you are either in a trance or you are not in a trance. Now, forget that. It's as I say, a cocktail, a complicated mixture of pretty much well understood principles.
Right.
And the idea that you put someone into a trance is pretty much abandoned now.
Well, then when I see people talk about this, like I see some people who promote the hypnosis things for, say therapeutic or NLP reasons, I feel like they're just kind of muddying all these things together. They'll be like, the example is often given of like, you're driving a car, and you get into a trance, and I'm like, well, what does that really have to do with, what you can do for me in hypnosis? Like if something unusual happened when I was driving a car, I quickly would pay attention to it and I wouldn't be in a so-called trance anymore. So I basically see a lot of bundling together of like, these trance states are common. It's like, what is this trance state you're talking about? Like, these are all different scenarios. These are all different factors. Like, what is this supposed trance state of where you have to do with what you're doing, you know? So I see this kind of muddying the waters to kind of paint a picture of like this trance state exists and we're going to tap into this trance state to do something amazing, right?
Completely. Yeah.
So is that how you see those things?
Absolutely. That they say, when you're driving a car and you kind of find you've forgotten the journey. Well, yeah, then you're in a trance.
You're engaged. That's all it means, right? Like you.
But they want to make it sound as though hypnosis is safe. They want to make it, on that side, they're saying, because you're in a trance every time you drive a car on a long journey, or if you get absorbed in a film, you're in a trance. And people think, oh, so it is safe. It's a fairly everyday thing. It's not a mysterious voodoo thing that I should be terrified of and sue you for afterwards when I feel sick tomorrow with a headache.
Right. It seems like they're establishing the safety, but it also seems like they're kind of establishing like the credibility of like, I may be able to put you into a trance because you've been in a trance in these other states and it's fairly common, you know. It's like, it's kind of just like making it more possible or something, or more credible. I don't know.
Don't know. And I don't know if they know either. I think there's on the part of hypnotists, I think there's an awful lot of, I've done this incantation before, it worked. I'm not going to change what I say. I always talk about being on a car journey, and that always results in people doing silly things on stage. I'm not going to change it now in case this breaks down and stops it working. It's, you know, that hypnotists are as susceptible to suggestion as everybody else. And if you don't want to break the mantra, if you want to keep doing the same things that have always worked.
I'll add in a note here. I want to add in that I do understand why people can cast a wide net when speaking about hypnosis and so-called trances and such. There are similarities to these assorted experiences. I was recently talking to a hypnotherapist who cast a wide net in terms of referring to many things as hypnosis related that I wouldn't have referred to as related to hypnosis. But I did understand her reasoning, and I don't think that's wrong of her to do. She was just trying to make the point that there are many ways we can be influenced by other people without knowing it. And you could view many of those things as being related to hypnosis. This podcast is often about understanding others' views and recognizing there are multiple ways to look at things. So I'm very cognizant of wanting to understand what she and others are thinking when they do make those comparisons and use that language. I think she and others are doing good work and helping people. But I think also there can be more exploitative and deceptive ways that people use these various analogies and framings. Some people are trying to sell their work to others in various ways to try to bring in hypnosis and trance concepts where those ideas may not be that relevant. So anyway, I just wanted to inject a little more nuance and empathy there for people who do have some rational reasons for speaking in those ways and casting a wide net in terms of seeing various other behaviors as having hypnosis-related elements. Okay, back to the talk. So I'm curious, one thing that's been real unclear to me or hard to get a handle on is the therapeutic hypnosis. Because I have, you know, to give some credit, I do think some of those people are quite legitimate. And it's just kind of hard for me to say, like, where, you know, what percentage are doing good and helpful things versus who's veering into more strange or irresponsible waters. Cause I think that's a range of a whole lot of that stuff from good and helpful to bad. But I'm curious, if you have takes on that you care to share.
I have a friend who's does a lot of hypnotherapy work, and he says it's important to realize that, firstly, the thing is, you are not using hypnosis for therapy. You are using hypnosis, you are doing conventional therapy while people are relaxed and more receptive. That's a big and important distinction that he likes to make. So it isn't the hypnosis itself. I'm not hypnotizing you so that you will find that you have more self-confidence and you find that your tobacco has lost its grip on you or whatever it is you want. It's much more that when you are hypnotized, you are relaxed, you are more suggestible, however you want to describe being hypnotized, certainly being more suggestible is a facet of it.
Yeah, even just from a basic level of like when you're more calm, when your mind is more calm, sure. you're more easily able to absorb ideas and you have less obstacles to them. So even at a very basic level, it makes sense that you're, you know, more suggestible or whatever. Yeah.
Well, as with all these things, people want the thing to work, and mm-hmm. they want it to work even more if they've paid a lot of money to have it done.
Yeah. Okay. So I wanted to ask you about, you know, because I do think, yeah, what do you think of the unhypnotizable label? You know, so obviously from what you've established or what your view is, because they're, you know, hypnotism, so-called, is just these various factors, I would imagine you'd say this unhypnotizable thing is like everyone to some extent or another is unhypnotizable, just depending on what factors are present at the time. So, but I'm curious how you see that. And maybe I'm curious if you would view yourself as unhypnotizable because you've thought about it so much and these kinds of things.
Well, obviously, I'm familiar with all the techniques. I realize I'm being suggested to, but I am suggestible the way absolutely everybody is. To say that someone is unhypnotizable, well, again, we're asking this question: what is hypnosis?
Right.
But undefined, a large yeah. part of hypnosis is suggestion. And you can say to anyone in the world, you know, the old thing with the lemon, imagine that I have a lemon here, really visualize the lemon, and I slice into it with a knife, and you see sour, bitter lemon juice, and I'm sucking into the, lemon juice. And you feel yourself salivating, and you're doing it now, and I'm doing it now, and most of the people watching this podcast are doing it now.
Right.
And that works on everybody. On the other hand, whether you can hypnotize somebody to the extent that they will see an elephant, that they will...
Right. Quit smoking.
Well, yeah, again, quit smoking. If you've paid a lot of money, you don't want to say, well,
I
paid all this money to a hypnotist and I was just an idiot. It was a waste of time. He just sat there and.
Yeah, there can be various incentives that are not obvious. Yeah, which I think accounts for a lot of like the more irresponsible people of this type getting good reviews and such, because A, we do influence people, like, so somebody can easily influence people to believe they've got something, you know, valuable, even if they haven't gotten something that valuable. And then B, there is this incentive to get something out of it. So you might fool yourself and you don't want to. Yeah. So just to say, I think there can be various of the effects present for some of the more bullshitty type of operators. So I want to ask you, yeah, so this Chase Hughes guy I was examining, he's somebody who's claimed to do all these amazing things, like being able to basically create a Manchurian candidate using his amazing, influence skills within a few minutes of meeting you, just kind of absurd claims. But even these, let's even just take the idea that, you know, even after a few sessions, somebody might be able to like get you to do things against your will, these kinds of ideas. What is your take on that? And what's the, you know... What would most people who know about hypnosis and psychology say about those kinds of claims?
My standard answer to this is you can use hypnosis. You can't make people do things they don't want to do. You can make people do things they don't want to admit that they want to do.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So, could you make somebody... could you make somebody try and assassinate Donald Trump? You know, well, okay, normally assassination is a dangerous, a risky thing. Nobody's going to want to, even Donald Trump, nobody's going to want to take the, sorry, I don't know your political views, this might be very dangerous saying this. Nobody's actually going to want to take the life of a human being. On the other hand, they know deep down that if push comes to shove, they can say, well, I didn't know what I was doing, the hypnotist, it was all down to suggestion. I had no control. It wasn't me. He's the one you need to blame.
And some of those people, you know, who get maybe into some weird situations like that, who are especially susceptible. I mean, I think there are some people that seek out this kind of, you know, these kind of practitioners for various forms of help, who are especially like, mentally weak, they're just especially susceptible. So the people that might get into some weird situations like that, like, you know, alleging that a hypnotist, you know, got them to do something that they didn't want to do, they might just be people that are, you know, extremely have very, very weak boundaries and have
easily
slew of things that lead them to embrace some authority figure and kind of like give up their will in some sense. Just say, I think there's this range of people that are like veering from the more boundaries, having better boundaries to like extremely low boundaries or really want some authority figure of any sort. I think it gets into these realms of, cause I've seen some of these people that go to these kind of NLP kind of things. I was in that world for 6 months or so. And it struck me that some of these people just really, really want a leader of some sort who they really want somebody to tell them what to do. And so they're the people that are more easily going to be like, oh, I will do these things. And I think they do often feel like I'm not in control. I'm just doing what this guy told me to do. Sure. It's giving up their will in a sense is something that they kind of want in some sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, or just getting people to do things deep down that they would like to do. You know, they just want to cut loose. They want to abandon responsibility. They want to, if you want to get away from the political example that I used earlier, you know, in an X-rated show, you get somebody to get up on stage and take all their clothes off.
Right.
Now, that's not something that someone, you know, if you say to somebody, stand on stage, take all your clothes off, they're going to say, well, no. On the other hand, it may be something they would, deep down, they are a closet exhibitionist. They'd love to do this and they'd love to get out and show off to everybody. But they know that if they were to just stand on stage and take all their clothes off, everyone would say, well, you know, what a show off, what a prat, what an idiot. Whereas if they can say, oh, it was the hypnotist, I didn't know, I was under his control, and they're doing what they want to do deep down, but they have the excuse for it.
Right, which is kind of like why some people drink and do drugs, because it's giving up, you know, giving an excuse to engage and be like, oh, I was just kind of out of my mind at that time, but it was kind of fun or something.
Same thing.
Yeah, yeah. And I should throw in too, like to be fully responsible here, I think, because I was reading about this guy, John Connolly, who does rapid resolution therapy, and he was accused of, you know, using hypnosis and trance-like states to abuse, you know, allegations that he was abusing, sexually assaulting or abusing his patients when they were in trance-like states. And you hear other stories like that. And I think, you know, it's not to what I'm saying here, or what maybe what you're saying too, is we're not saying that resolves responsibility of somebody who took advantage of people, because I do think there's definitely something about the authority, you know, authority patient kind of relationship that can lead to all sorts of real abuses. So I just wanted to say that doesn't detract from the idea that there's all sorts of abuses, even if there's not like a trance-like state, that, you know, it's, there's still trust and authority and all these kinds of things that can be present.
I'm not saying
that about John Connolly, because I don't know anything about that case. I just know about the allegations.
All right. But I mean, of course, it cuts both ways. You get a hypnotist who is exerting undue pressure on somebody, and they, you know, he says, you've got to do this if you want to be hypnotized, if you want to get over your feelings of inferiority or your whatever it is he's treating them for. And if you want to do this, then you have to trust me. So. And he leads it into a sexual situation. And there are hypnotists who will do that, which is obviously immoral. But it can work the other way. After the session, if a hypnotist rather unwisely says to a subject, you know, that was great, okay, would you like to go out for a drink? And it leads to something sexual. And afterwards, she regrets it. Again, putting the standard sexual stereotypes here, that it's the woman who's seduced. Mm-hmm. But she is, you know, she's happy to go along with it, but later regrets it. Mm-hmm. Then she says, oh my God, why did I do that? Whatever made me go with somebody who was as, you know, as domineering, as old, as ugly as him? I must have been hypnotized. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then he's in trouble because she's got the ready excuse to come back. And,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there can be, yeah, many ways that can play out. Let's see. I was going to ask you. So yeah, do you know much about the, you know, because what I often hear about people that embrace these kind of, you can do kind of Manchurian Candidate-esque control scenarios of people, I often hear them reference MK Ultra and these kinds of things. And, you know, I don't know how much you know about that, but my take on it, my rough take is like, I think people vastly overestimate what was done with MK Ultra. Like, if you read the facts,
I don't know the facts.
Do you know the MK Ultra? It was the kind of mind control, brainwashing things that, the American government was doing back in the, 50s, 60s post World War II, where they were, doing like, giving LSD to people and trying to do brainwashing kind of experiments and these kinds of things and using psychedelics. But anyway, a lot of people will reference those things, and I might insert some resources in here, but some people will reference those ideas to basically bolster the idea. To my mind, they're taking those things out of context and exaggerating what was done with them, because from what I've read, they were mostly just complete failures and showed how little you could actually do with those things. But okay. people will take those historical things and act as if there were so many things possible with hypnosis or other kinds of mind control things. But it sounds like maybe you don't have a take on the MK Ultra
one. I mean, I can tell you that Darren did a similar thing in one of his television specials, where he hypnotized somebody to go to the theater and assassinate the lecturer. There was a guy called Stephen Fry who was giving a lecture, and this guy was hypnotized that on a certain trigger, when a woman in a polka dot dress or something stood up and left the theater from the seat next to him, he would stand up and shoot Stephen Fry. And he did this. He shot the speaker on stage, and it was carefully done. Stephen Fry was in on it, and he had blood bags, and the thing was made to look as though he'd really been assassinated. But of course, it was a fake gun, and it was done with theatrics. But one can always argue that deep down the guy knew this,
right.
I've been hypnotized by Derren Brown. I am, in some sense, I'm doing this because Derren Brown has told me to it. Deep down, deep at a very deep level, he knows this. He knows there's something strange going on. And even if it isn't, I mean, even if it is a real gun, even if he does shoot Stephen Fry, then he's always got this. I mean, it wasn't me.
I was just doing what they said, which gets into the whole like the shock. The famous, what is it? Is it the Milgram experiment? Which there are those criticisms or people pointing out that those people knew they were in an experiment of some sort, right? Like, so it gets into the realm of like, how much does it really tell us about, obviously there's people that go along with all sorts of horrible things in the real world, but the Milgram experiment specifically of, those people in a similar way knew they were in some sort of experiment. Like, did they really think that these people were putting these people in danger? These kinds of questions. I do think there's something that the Milgram experiment and the other ones that were more replicated afterwards, I do think there's something it tells us, but there's also those questions of like, how much do they suspect or really know?
They tried to resolve it with other experiments. I mean, giving electric shocks to a puppy and similar experiments. They've never really been quite satisfactory.
Right. There's still questions and about what exactly it all means and how relevant or powerful it is and such. A little note here. There is a lot to say about MK Ultra and government programs on mind control and influence. I might do an episode on that in the future. Some people who like to promote the amazing mind control things they can allegedly teach, people like Chase Hughes, will point to these various ideas in the past and failed experiments in the past as a way to promote the idea that these amazing things are possible. For example, Chase Hughes will often reference random things people wrote in the past as potential concepts, just as ideas, and he'll use those things as a way to promote his claims. But again, many of these things were just ideas. For example, on Joe Rogan, Chase references the writings of George Easterbrooks, who was a bit involved in some MK Ultra mind control types of things back then, but who also seemed to me, from what I read, to be a bit of a crackpot, who had all sorts of wacky ideas that he'd send to the government to try to get started on, and who also claimed all sorts of things were possible with hypnosis that didn't seem to have any support. So just to say, there are all sorts of ways one can filter back through all the weird and wacky people and episodes from the past in order to paint an illusory picture that there have been amazing mind control and brainwashing type things done. When the truth, if you look at it objectively and skeptically and read the best resources, the truth is often much more mundane and unimpressive, not as exciting. And there are big incentives by all sorts of people to drum up claims about such things. That's why there are so many books on MKUltra that make it sound like amazing things happened or could have happened. It's similar to the many bad and silly and unrealistic books you can find on UFO sightings and UFO histories. If you like a realistic account of MKUltra, I'd recommend The Search for the Manchurian Candidate by John Marks. It's known for being a fact-based account of what happened back then, and it's known for separating mind control fact from fiction. Okay, back to the talk. You know, I think some people, when it comes to, you know, the power to control people in some powerful way, I think, you know, with the Chase Hughes things I was examining, I think some people would reply like, well, you guys don't know what's really possible in these areas. Maybe there's like these secret, you know, military operators or amazing, you know, hypnotists out there that can really control people really quickly. In a serious major way, but I'm curious, what would you say to those people though who have those doubts?
Well, you're right. I mean, we don't know. Maybe it is possible. We have no idea. But let's see some evidence. Let's see it written up. Let's see it researched. Yeah. Let's see controlled experiments done.
Yeah, that's the thing that gets me. That's the thing I've responded. It's like big claims require big evidence. Like, yeah. You can't just say like, oh, maybe this guy knows how to do these things. Who says he has done these things? It's like, well, skepticism is warranted unless you have actually seen evidence that these things are possible, right? So,
I mean, the problem is that people like Chase Hughes have got a very authoritative and confident manner, and they just say, oh yes, there are people out there that are doing this, I can't talk about this, but believe me, I've seen it. And there's something about their manner and their confidence, as he says in his I watched the Joe Rogan podcast, and he says, you know, I've seen this, I've done this, and he just exudes confidence, and he talks about how it is so important when you're convincing people of things to be completely confident and to not have the slightest doubt in the way you portray these things, that mustn't come across. You can't, you can't hesitate. You can't show any kind of doubt or reluctance. You have to say, no, I know this, I've seen this. And provided that you have this aura of gravitas that you can say, yes, you know, well, you may doubt it. That's your right. But, I've seen it. I do know.
Yeah. The ability to confidently say things goes a really long way. I think people underestimate what a powerful thing that really is. You know, it's such a cliche, really, like the idea that people can lie to us. But I think it really is a powerful thing. If somebody's able to just tell you things that are lies and not have a problem with that and do it confidently, that goes a really long way. I mean, that accounts for so many scams. Like, it's surprisingly easy to be taken in by confident people who say things confidently. Yeah. Yeah, is there anything else, Martin, that you would want to throw in here that you might think would be interesting to on this topic for people that we haven't talked about? Maybe there's something that really, really wild that stands out that was really noteworthy in your hypnotism career that was really unusual or that you think about a lot?
Plenty of really weird, silly things, yes. I've never had the stage of being with someone who wouldn't wake up. Which I know some hypnotists have, because if you believe you're in a trance, then you know, I'm out of this. I'm really happy. I'm asleep.
Which gets into the power of the. I wanted to mention the power of the placebo too, because that really relates to this too, right?
Well, like, certainly there's the power of the placebo when you're using hypnosis for medicine, and when you're using it to block pain. Blocking pain is a very tricky one. Darren has done this in his show, where he's getting somebody to get into an ice bath and saying you will feel no pain, and people have got into an ice bath, and you know, Darren's got the thermo cameras up there so that you can see his skin is really cold, and using hypnosis to block pain. Now, to what extent is pain psychological? To what extent is it physiological? They're very deep, very complicated questions.
And I was thinking, even just the fact that, you know, people will find themselves doing unusual things during hypnosis or things that surprise them. I mean, that seems directly related to the power of placebo. I mean, like, because we think something is happening to us, it, in a way it is happening to us in some sense. Would you agree with that? Yeah,
it's all the same stuff.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, same psychological stuff.
Placebo, suggestion, peer pressure, all of these things combined. There is no one thing which is hypnosis. There's nothing that you can say, yes, you are hypnotized, you are not. They're trying it. They're doing brain scans on people to see whether there's any physiological difference in the brain of someone who is hypnotized and someone who is not.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, this has been great. It's been very interesting. Is there anything? I think we're good, but if you want to mention anything else or
promote
something. I can't
think of anything straight. No, I'm more than happy to answer any more questions.
Do you want to mention what you're working on these days? Are you still doing the shows?
I am still doing, well, as you know, but your viewers don't, I broke my leg a few months ago. So that's kind of put the dampers on things a bit. But I'm winding it down, to be honest. With the COVID epidemic, all my shows obviously stopped. And I thought, well, you know, this is a good time to start winding down. So and to write my book.
Oh, book. So, yeah, I was going to ask you if you have any books. Yeah,
so. Do keep an eye open for my book, which I keep saying I've been trying to write for the past 5 years or so. I know I can write really well, and I know I dislike writing.
I can relate to that. Yeah.
You know, I would love to have written a book. I want to get all this down. I want to write all this stuff. So keep an eye open for it. In 18 months or so, it may be out there on the shelves.
Well, sure. Yeah. Maybe you can, you know, when you get out, do some promotion, maybe you can come on again. We can talk about some more things. Yeah.
Will do.
All right. Thanks a lot, Martin. This has been great.
Not at all. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you.
That was a talk with Martin Taylor. You can learn more about his hypnosis work at his site, hypnotism.co.uk, and watch some videos of his stage act there. I'll include some resources related to this talk on my website, behavior-podcast.com. You can find those in the entry for this episode on that site. If you enjoyed this episode, I think you'll like some other episodes in the back catalog. I have a talk with Anthony Barnhart about magic and misdirection. In that episode, we talk about Darren Brown, we talk about how magicians misdirect the attention of the audience, and more. And you might just like perusing the back catalog of the People Who Read People podcast to see what you find. Okay, thanks for listening. Music by Small Skies.